Good morning, Colorado. You're listening to the Daily Sunup. The Daily Sunup podcast is a conversation with the Colorado Sun. See our trust indicators at coloradosun.com/ethics. It's Friday, March 15th. Today, we're hearing from Colorado Sun marketing and events specialist Christina Pritchett about the most recent event, Denver's migrant crisis. Before we begin, Citywide Banks, a division of HTLF Bank, is a Colorado-focused community bank helping companies grow and families thrive. They keep decision-making to a local level, and bankers are focused on providing impactful financial solutions for your business. Visit citywidebanks.com to learn more. Citywide Banks is a member FDIC and an equal housing lender. Now, let's go back in time with some Colorado history. In the spring of 1877, Colorado's first state legislature convened in Denver. They adopted essential laws and affirmed territorial decisions to solidify its status as a union state. Key among the enacted statutes was the official adoption of the state seal, first introduced in 1861 during the territorial period. This emblem, created by Governor Gilpin and Secretary Weld, featured mining tools, a mountain landscape, Roman fasces, the all-seeing eye of Providence, and a Latin motto meaning nothing without Providence. They later added State of Colorado and its Union Admission Year. This seal, once integral to official documents and displayed in the state capitol, laid the foundation for a broader set of symbols representing Colorado's identity, including its flag, songs, and various state symbols. Before we continue, the Colorado Sun's 2024 Reader Survey is officially open. Let us know what you think about your membership and the Colorado Sun's products. The survey is open through March 29th. Take it today by visiting cosun.co/2024readersurvey. Next, our feature story.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Daily Sunup podcast, and happy Friday. Thank you so much for spending a little bit of your day with me. My name is Christina Pritchett, and I'm the marketing and events specialist for the Colorado Sun. Today, I want to share some clips with you from our latest event, Denver's Migrant Crisis. The Colorado Sun's government and human services reporter Jennifer Brown sat down with a panel to discuss how long Denver can sustain the influx of immigrants from South America, how a volunteer network is filling the gaps, and the journey of a woman and her family who recently traveled here from Venezuela, and what she's doing now to help others. So I want to start with a clip when Jennifer asked John Ewing, a spokesperson for Denver Human Services, about the city closing hotels where migrants are being placed and how much money the city of Denver has received.
You know, your big boss, Mayor Mike Johnston, when he made some announcements about scaling back on some of the spending on migrant services, the numbers were definitely like headed down. So I would imagine this is particularly rough timing now that they're headed back up in March. But what the mayor announced a couple of weeks ago is that they would stop housing migrants at 4 of the 7 hotels that the city's been using to pay for those hotel rooms. And this was estimated to cut down about $60 million out of a $180 million that Denver was on track to spend in next year's budget. So tell people, like, what kind of help financially has Denver gotten from the federal government, from the state, in terms of offsetting those huge figures? And also, you know, what happens, John, as these hotel shelters close? I think one per week for 4 weeks they're closing. Are people going to end up in tents? You know, what's going to happen?
We're going to do our level best to prevent that. I think even now we see it. It's been largely successful going from 5,000 people to 1,500, but you want to prevent anybody from falling through the cracks. And unfortunately, when you are moving this fast and you're doing this much and you have nonprofits working day and night, that is going to happen. And so we're always going to redouble our efforts to make sure if someone is falling through the cracks, if someone is experiencing homelessness, we need to get out there. Okay, and we have our host teams. We need to be figuring out what we can do about this. Largely, it's been successful. You aren't seeing widespread encampment issues, but we have a number of issues that we need to work through. And I think I forgot the first part of your question. It was a good question, I know, but what was it?
I packed too much in there. I was asking how much money Denver's got.
Yes. And state and federal. Yeah. So we've spent around $60 million to date. The state has provided around $3.5 million. But more crucially, they are also backing many of the nonprofits. A lot of their grants are what are fueling the nonprofits that are actually helping families get out of shelter and into housing. They've also provided staff, so they've been helpful. The federal government has provided around $1.6 million cash on the barrelhead, and then we've submitted reimbursements for, I believe, around $10 million, something along that. It's a long, laborious process. It takes quite a while. And it takes quite a while to hear back or anything along those lines. But yeah, I mean, still speaking of it, $60 million we've already spent. We have no idea, you know, what this year is going to hold necessarily. We can't predict so much of it. There's a number of funding issues that need to be met there. And so we do continue to call on the federal government to provide more funding, not only to cities like Denver, not only to cities like Chicago, New York, but how about El Paso, Texas, too, that is dealing with this head on, you know, that they deserve more funding as well. You know, this isn't just a blue-red issue. This is a nationwide issue, and we need to remember that. And even folks in Texas need more support as well. So
the next clip I want to play for you all is when Jennifer was talking to DJ Summers, the director of policy and research at Common Sense Institute, and they were discussing the costs that school districts may see as more students are being rolled within those districts.
We've all seen Denver Public Schools is saying that it's received an estimated 3,400 migrant children over the past year. And I know this is happening at a smaller scale, but it's happening at other school districts too. A recent story I wrote about, you know, the small number of migrants who have settled in Colorado Springs. I reached out to several school districts in El Paso County, and, you know, one of them had maybe 50 new children. But talk about, DJ, like what this will cost and how does Colorado end up paying for that?
So there's a couple ways to estimate how much Denver Public Schools is going to pay. And you're right, there is a spillover effect. They're not all landing in Denver Public Schools. The 3,400 that have landed in Denver Public Schools is just what's landed there. We don't know what's been what's accumulated in Aurora Public Schools or in Jeffco or in Dougco or any of the other big metro school districts, Cherry Creek. This is just focused on Denver Public Schools. Now, they get at the district level a certain portion of state funding for every single student that they matriculate before October 1st of any given year. So there's the difference between how much they're going to need to pay for every student versus how much they've received from the state to pay for each of those students. So there's two different estimates, and it's between $26 million and $48 million. That $48 million is what they will have to pay in instruction and support for those 3,400 students. That's from a previous Common Sense Institute estimate of instruction and student spending instruction and classroom spending per student, about $14,000 per student. So it's a difference between how much they have in shortfall versus how much they will absolutely be on the hook to pay, which is close to $50 million if you use that estimate. And again, this is, we're talking, it's similar to uncompensated care. This is a section of the student population that will probably need additional resources. They're going to need additional linguistic support because they're second English language learners. English is a second language. They're going to need additional social support. They're going to need maybe additional transportation support. And these are not the same kinds of students that Denver Public Schools has previously matriculated and projected for. This is a different subset of the population that's really going to stretch those dollars out.
I highly encourage you to head on over to our YouTube channel, and I'll make sure a link is in our show notes. And if you're already listening to this podcast on YouTube, you're one step closer. But check out the entire event. Again, it's called Denver's Migrant Crisis. I wish I could play the entire event for you here, but I highly encourage all of you to go check it out. A couple other pieces of the event that were really interesting was Jennifer was able to talk to a woman who traveled here from Venezuela with her family, and she was telling the story about how her family got here, why they fled their home. And it's definitely a story worth listening to. And another panelist was Candace Marley, the founder and executive director of All Souls. And they talked about the organization, what the organization is doing to aid the migrants by supplying them with tents, supplies to stay warm during the cold weather, and so much more. Again, our entire event is available to watch on YouTube, and the link will be in the show notes. But if you're interested in attending virtual and in-person events, we have some really good ones coming up on the horizon, including an in-person networking event in Loveland on March 27th, and a virtual event with environmental reporter Michael Booth, all about trains, on April 4th. So if you're interested in that, head over to coloradosun.com/events. And those are both free, open to our readers, members, to the public. We would love for you to join us. So thank you so much for joining me today, and I hope everyone has a great weekend.
You can read more at coloradosun.com. Finally, here are a few stories that you should know about today. The snowstorm that continues to pound the Front Range and the Colorado High Country left thousands of travelers stranded Thursday on Interstate 70 and at Denver International Airport. Hundreds of vehicles were stuck on I-70, including a bus of 50 women who spent more than 20 hours trying to get home. Hundreds of flights were canceled at DIA on Thursday. Snow is being measured in feet in the foothills west of Denver. With the storm expected to last into Friday, travelers are encouraged to check ahead before heading out onto the roads or to the airport. After getting criticized for not being transparent before wolves were reintroduced to Colorado late last year, officials from Colorado Parks and Wildlife are touring towns in wolf country. Recent meetings in Silverthorne, Steamboat Springs, and Winter Park have been well attended, and the crowds have included the general public and ranchers. The biggest questions have continued to involve compensation for cattle killed by wolves, but people also wonder how hikers and other recreationalists should react should they encounter a wolf. More meetings are planned in the next few months. About 120 up-and-coming movie directors will gather at the Stanley Hotel in Estes Park in May as part of the Sundance Institution's Director's Lab. They will shoot scenes during the institution's first foray outside its longtime home in Utah. But could the aspiring filmmakers in the historic hotel where Stephen King conjured The Shining be a harbinger for big things to come in Estes Park? No one is talking on the record, but off the record, the state's film industry champions say landing the Sundance Institution or perhaps the Sundance Festival could be the coup that challenges Colorado's status in the movie production world. For more information on all of these stories, visit our website, coloradosun.com. And don't forget to tune in again next time. Now, a quick message from our team.
This is Michael Booth.
And this is John Ingold. We cover health and climate here at the Colorado Sun.
Every week, John and I work together to send out a newsletter to our premium members called The Temperature.
In this newsletter, we share our latest reporting about health and climate and how they intersect. Issues like forever chemicals, healthcare's rising costs, and the lingering effects of the pandemic. The Temperature is one of our weekly newsletters available to members at the premium level.
To sign up, head to coloradosun.com/join. Not only will you be able to sign up for The Temperature and our other premium newsletters, but you'll be supporting the Colorado Sun as a member, and thanks for doing that.